This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am getting ready for the 8th anniversary of Joy on Paper, which will be in March. It's just amazing. I can't believe it. You know, I have interviewed so many people. It's just amazing. And I am so happy that one of the people that I interviewed along the way is Bria Burton. And the minute I interviewed her, I said to myself, oh my goodness, oh my dear, sassafras and ginger beer. I need to have Bria here with me on Joy on Paper. So I am so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper today as a guest. But next week, you're taking over the chair for me.
Well, yes, what an amazing intro. Thank you, Patsy.
Wow. Well, you know, you just look so comfortable when you were here in the studio the first time. I thought, well, I think she thinks she belongs here.
Well, I will say I got there and I just thought, okay, here we go. I've never hosted the entire show before. I've only been a guest. And once it got going, I must say, wow, this is a lot of fun. I think I did get pretty comfortable.
Well, you certainly did. And I had so many wonderful, wonderful comments from listeners. I got some wonderful emails saying how great you are. They love your voice. Of course, they fell in love with your voice the minute they heard you do the book buzzes. Which,
oh, thank
you know,
you
just have this wonderful voice. And so next week, you're going to be right here in this chair.
That's right. Yep.
And do you want to tell us about the guests? Give us a little preview of who's going to be on the program?
I would love to, yes. So we're talking about Thursday, February 9th, and the regular show time, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern time. There will be two science fiction authors, probably no surprise there since I do the science fiction book buzz. And the first guest we're going to have is Carol Stivers. And I'm going to be talking to her about her book, The Mother Code. And this book, I was so engrossed as I was listening first and foremost. I've really enjoyed doing audiobooks this year. I have a 5-year-old and I get so much reading done with audiobooks. And I find that it works well with the phase of life we're in. And it was so engrossing. It had this incredible combination of just artificial intelligence was in there with this this kind of blend of hard sci-fi and community, what it means to be a mother, and futuristic world-changing, not quite dystopian. I wouldn't call it a full-on dystopian type novel, but it was so, so well-written, and I cannot wait to talk to Carol about this book and what it took to get this book out there. And then my next guest will be author Edward Ashton. Now, I think I picked up his book through BookBub, which is that email service where they'll send you discount, like when there's sales going on for ebooks. And I saw his book on there, and I thought, ooh, that looks fun. And Mickey 7 is the name of the book. And I will say, it was quite a romp. There is a lot of it is hard sci-fi, but there's a lot of humor. There's a lot of tongue in cheek, and this main character is an expendable. So he becomes cloned every time he dies on a mission. He gets cloned again and again. And so it's like this tongue-in-cheek, what does that mean? Is this person immortal? And then he's not really supposed to be a multiple. So there's only supposed to be one of him at a time. But what happens if he doesn't want to go back in the recycler when he's accidentally claimed, somebody claims he's dead, but now there's two of him. What does he do? And so it's this far future and also far off galaxy. So, you know, this wonderful sci-fi story that I had a lot of fun reading.
Well, and Edward Ashton's a great writer. I love his books. And he something wonderful is going to be happening for him.
Yes, I was about to share that. So that book is getting a major motion picture treatment. And the movie is actually titled Mickey 17, which, well, that right there intrigues me. I can't wait to ask Edward Ashton. Now, tell us about the change. They changed the title for the movie. Do you know why they did that? And I'm excited to hear what he has to say about that.
Well, in Hollywood, they can do anything they want.
I have a feeling that's probably what he'll say, but who knows? Maybe they gave him, you know, some insight of what their decisions were. Maybe not. So we'll get the scoop from him.
Well, that's exciting. You have two wonderful guests. They're both great writers, and I know it's going to be so much fun for you to talk to them. Because, of course, as you said, they are sci-fi writers, and you are a sci-fi writer, among many other things. Sometimes, don't you wish you could just clone an extra one of you to, you know, do the cleaning of the house? If you could assign them, you know, if you.
I thought of his book because somebody compared it to Multiplicity, that movie with Michael Keaton years ago, where he's cloned over and over, and I mean, what a wonderful thing to have a clone who takes care of this and takes care of... I'd love a housekeeping clone. That would be probably my first first assignment to that clone.
That's for sure. Well, I love your website, and I love your... Right on the front, you know, page, you say, rekindle your wonder. And I love that.
Yes, that was an author motto that I worked on for a while and finally decided that was going to be my author motto to tie in the idea of science fiction, fantasy that I write, and also inspirational fiction, and this idea of rekindling. I like the fire imagery that Kindle brings, and just the idea of wonder. And I have a child, and he reminds me all the time, I should have a little bit more childlike wonder because it's a beautiful thing.
Well, of course, I love your website, and I like that what you have up there. You have an event that's coming up in Gulfport Indie Fair. Do you want to tell us about that?
Sure. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I go to the Saturday night market in Gulfport every third Saturday. They have a night market. And it's right on the main stretch of Beach Boulevard South in Gulfport, Florida. And the event goes from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. And it is a variety of vendors. So I'm an author there, and I have another author who is in the booth with me, Sheila McNaughton, with her wonderful, wonderful book, You Don't Know What I Have Done, is a mystery novel that she wrote. It's absolutely fabulous. And so she and I... have our booth there with a variety of vendors, from artists and craft makers and just kind of very unique types of artisans from local artisans. And it is so much fun. We just have a blast being able to chat with people about our books. And we have a lot of fun. And sometimes there are other authors there as well. Sometimes we're the only authors there. It's a quite eclectic night. It's really cool.
Well, Gulfport is such a delightful little sort of tucked away little part here in St. Petersburg on the edge of everything. It's a lovely area, and I like this idea of doing something on a Saturday evening when people are like, what should we do on Saturday evening? You don't want to stay in and watch Netflix all night. It's just great to get out there and be among people. And, of course, they have some great restaurants in Gulfport. And I think it's just delightful.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. They do have fantastic restaurants down there. And, yeah, it is. It's kind of just a fun place to walk. And it is. It's a very funky, eclectic vibe. And it's very neat down there.
And, you know, Carol J. Perry, you know, she came out with this idea for a series called Haunted Haven, and she based it on one of the hotels or old inns that is right there in Gulfport. So that's why I just love this series of hers. And as you know, her first book got a starred review from Publishers Weekly.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, but I don't think I knew about her basing it on, oh, that's such a neat thing to hear.
Yeah, well, I love it. I love her books because she brings in all the ghosts of all the famous people who, you know, were here in Florida at one point in our area. And so I love to think of her, you know, getting this idea. This is the wonderful thing about something, a place like Gulfport. As you said, you're strolling around, you're walking around, you see people. It's just fun.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of fun. And the other thing, one of my books features my dog and cat, Lance and Ringo Tales, humorous little pet stories. And that actually tends to be one of my best sellers at this market because it's like a dog parade. Everybody brings out their dogs. It's so sweet. And they're just some of the best behaved dogs I've ever seen, actually.
Well, you know, now I'm going to be talking to a friend of yours who you sent my way. Shona Bedford is going to be on. Is she already on? She's on the phone. Shona, do you want to say hi to Bria?
Yes. Hi, Bria. Hi, Shona. This is so special to be talking to you on the radio.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see you guys again.
Well, I wanted to, again, Bria, thank you so much for taking over for next Thursday. It's going to be so much fun. And now,
I'm very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
Okay. And now I'm going to talk to Shona about her book, because it's so fascinating. And you've heard a lot of her stories, and I want to add a few more today. So we'll talk to you next week, Bria. And Shona, how are you?
I am wonderful and cold. I'm in Indiana right now.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, very cold then. Yes. Well, we're lucky. It's going to be 82 today. It's beautiful here. So, wow. As I said, I wanted to have you back on today because one of the things is, you know, when you came on this program and you had a book called Red Flag Run. And when I first got the book, I didn't even know what it was going to be about. But when I got it, and then I was reading the book, and then I realized it was also an Audible. And I got the Audible version, which you narrated yourself, which is perfect since you're a singer. And you do it with so much enthusiasm, and so, it's just so much fun to listen to the Audible. I really enjoyed it. So I wanted you to tell people a little bit more about the stories in your book, because as I said, some of it is very funny. Some of the stories you tell are very funny, but then there's also the serious side of modern day dating. So let's talk a little bit about the book.
Okay, yeah. I've had so many guys that I've dated, and it seems like it's just a constant. They say the same things, they do the same things, and I always wondered why exactly that was. You know, when you see a pattern, it's unfortunately, for example, a lot of people will fall for the, I love you, you're so beautiful. And as soon as I meet a guy, and that's the first thing they say, you're so beautiful, my red flag goes up, and it goes, okay. He knows the manual, because they think that if they compliment someone, that they're automatically going to fall for their manipulation. And I think the last time we had talked about breaking up, you know, I had one guy, or actually several guys, tell me, you have to break up with me in person. And no, you don't. You don't have to break up in person. You can break up through text. It's okay. Even if somebody harasses you about it, it's okay, because usually these types of people like to try to manipulate you when you see them face to face. And you fall right back into the same thing. Just, you know, they'll try to control how they see you. They try to, like, for example, this one guy that I recently dated, he likes to take on my personality, I guess you would say. it's like, oh, what do you like to do? Well, I like to do that too. What do you want to do tonight? I want to do that too. Oh, you say that? So do I. And it's like, those are red flags that you just need to get rid of somebody. You want somebody who has their own life, their own friends.
No, you know, nowadays with all this computer business, everybody's on the computer, everybody's texting each other, going to different websites to find dates. And it's amazing. I was really surprised at how many even senior citizens are doing this. And again, because they don't have the experience, they might have dated, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago when people were... I don't know if they were more reasonable, but at least you knew where they were from, and you probably had some connection. You knew, you know, where they worked or the town they lived in. But nowadays, you don't know anything.
So a tip I say is whenever you meet somebody online and they want to meet you in person, I always request the FaceTime first, video chat first. And if they decline, then you know it's a red flag. Do not meet with them face-to-face. Because if they truly are who they are, then they will be more than happy to do so.
Exactly. Because it's not enough that you just see a photograph on a website.
No, I've met several guys. For example, there was one, oh, so nice. He was so intelligent, and we hit it off immediately. There were phone calls, but as soon as I said I wanted to video chat, his response was, oh, I don't know technology very well. And I said, you have an iPhone. FaceTime is pretty easy. You just tap a button. But he would refuse. And so I knew that was a big red flag. Do not meet up with these people.
No, because that's evidence. You know, if anything happens, that's evidence. That's real evidence. And I'm sure they don't want it. But, you know, tell us something else. That, you know, when you've had an interesting life, an interesting career, what else is in your future in addition to this book? Are you doing more songs?
Yes, I'm doing more songs. I'm hoping to actually lay down an acoustic, raw version of one of my songs, and hopefully that will be done and released soon. I do have several scripts on the burner, so to speak, so just working on those, and I'm sure you know, as a writer, even a screenwriter, you just go over and over and edit and, you know... read. I do want to do a comedy because, as you heard my audiobook,
you have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, I enjoy just not off kilter sense of humor, but more surprising. You know, I really like physical humor. I think physical humor is very difficult to do. But I definitely want to write one of those. And then my life has been very interesting, so I'm writing more of a, trying to think of the right word.
Not a memoir, but something based on your experiences?
Yes, yes, like FBI and... I'm just joking. That's more fictional, but that would be, you know, fun and interesting. No, I'm actually writing a horror with one of my best friends who's also a writer. And it's a little, I don't want to say sci-fi in any way, or is it, it's more paranormal, I guess would be a good way of saying it.
But you're obviously finding a lot of fun in writing.
Oh, I love it, because whenever I write, I don't know if you do the same thing, is I visualize. I'm very good at visualizing whenever I write. And so I see a scene, and there's a script I'm working on right now, and in my mind the scene is just absolutely amazing. And if I can pull it off, I would have people walking out of the theater just going, can you believe it? Because I said the best movies are the ones you remember 20 years later.
That's true. It's very true. You know, one of the things when you're writing spec scripts, and you know, you never know. in this world. It is a very strange thing how things can happen to you. But I think with the Red Flag Run, it gives you an opportunity perhaps to get out there and do some public speaking, meeting more people, laying down a platform, because that's one of the important things when you're a writer nowadays. You really do have to have that platform where you have a combination of your book, your website, YouTube, and all of that, and of course all the social media that writers need nowadays.
Yeah, I really think that this book is going to help me get that platform, because I really want to be an inspiration, you know, to people, and at least be a positive force, you know, with Facebook and social media. A lot of the comments I've had is if they're having a bad day or they're very depressed, they always go to see what I'm doing because it just gives them a smile. And I think that's such inspiring in itself that I can do that for other people, and I just try to keep and hold on to that and spread some wisdom, because all of us are looking for answers, and you know, it's difficult to see real truth. And so I hope that that's something I do with my book and just in general.
Well, I think you did, and I do really appreciate that you came on today. I wanted to get the word out there a little bit more to my listeners, because as I said, I got emails from people, and I collected a bunch of stories of dating experiences that really I was like amazed at some of the dating things that people have gone through, and I thought, whoa, this is just the perfect time for it, because people are, I think now that we've come out of the pandemic, people want to get out. They want to start making human connections. And as they do that, it's important that they know things and the problems and the opportunities that you write about in Red Flag Run.
I would encourage people, just don't be so desperate. You know, sometimes if somebody gives you a compliment, you just jump on the horse right away. And you're like, oh my gosh, this person likes me. You know, it's okay to go slow. It's okay not to get married on the second date. It's okay.
Yeah, that's generally speaking a good idea. Unless...
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, actually. I'm in a little funny position, because I was... my husband's mother told him that he was going to marry me like a week after she met me. She just told him, you know, you're going to marry her, because I'm not going to stand for anything else. And so I was very lucky and very blessed. But
especially if a mom likes you. I mean, that's pretty big.
Oh, that was a big. I realized that the moment she said it. She just right in front of me. We were having dinner. She looked at him and she said, "You're going to marry her." And he looked at and he said, "Well, let's start planning it." And that was it. It was a done deal.
And it, we'll see, you're one in a million.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But again, thank you so much, Shauna, for being on Joy on Paper. I think you're just charming and delightful, and I hope that you have lots of luck with this book, and keep writing. And when you have something new, you let me know, and I'll have you back here on Joy on Paper, okay?
Okay, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to have a book buzz, commercials, and then I'm coming back with a Nat Geo book, a really great Nat Geo book. Well, all Nat Geo books are great.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. It's a new year, so what better way to start the new year by reading a new book? Unsure which book to read? Don't worry. Stacy has you covered. Stacy is the character from the brand new book, Stacy's Remarkable Books. This, based on a true story, was written by Stacy Abrams and illustrated by Kit Thomas. Stacy's Remarkable Books tells the story of Stacy, who loves getting lost in her favorite books. Stacy eventually meets a girl named Julie who has little trouble reading in English. Together, they start sharing books so she can practice, and the rest of the students in their class join along. Almost 10 years ago, Stacy Abrams received an unexpected note from Julie, thanking Stacy for her friendship and how they were able to bond over books. It was this friendship that became the basis for the book. Already the number one new release for children's books on girls and women's issues on Amazon, Stacy's Remarkable Books is the companion to the number one New York Times bestseller, Stacy's Extraordinary Words. It's a tale from Stacy's childhood about the power that books have. When reading this book, I think this book will have the power to bond people together. Just like how Stacy and Julie's friendship stemmed from a bond over books. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, or guests, I don't know. I'm going to have someone from National Geographic Kids. Who's on to first? Hey, Sarah.
Hi. This is Sarah. Yes. Hello. How are you?
Okay, fine. It's Sarah Wozner Flynn, and I love this book, Sarah. It is called Not So Common Sense. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's beautiful. It's, of course, a Nat Geo book. That's what I expect from a Nat Geo book. And it's got my favorite yellow edging, which makes me so happy, puts a smile on my face. So, Sarah, did you have fun learning all about money?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, I learned so much. No, I'm not. If Alvin comes on, he's the financial educator. I am a nonfiction writer, so I love just digging into subjects, and digging into money was just a super enlightening experience that I had.
Well, I think Alvin is on. Alvin Hall.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to have you because you are the author of an award-winning children's book called Show Me the Money. And
yes, I am.
So you know all about money.
Yes, I've been writing about money and teaching about it for a long time. And I love this book, Not So Common Sense, because it really captures what I think is the essence of what will interest a child, but also their parents about money, because parents actually buy these books for their children. So that connection, when the parents will look at this and say, I think I want my child to know this, but I find this interesting too. This is what makes this book so great.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what happens with Nat Geo books. And they really are for everyone from 2 to 102. And
yes.
And you can, and the wonderful thing, of course, they are so beautifully laid out, and they're so gorgeous. The paper's gorgeous. The photography is gorgeous, and the writing is always so perfect. And, of course, the research that's gone into it is amazing.
Yes.
Yes, it required a lot of research. Yes, on my end, I worked on it from 2019 to 2020, and then we actually rewrote quite a few parts after 2020 and everything that went on in the world, and money was such a big part of changes that happened, and so we had to go and write things from a post-2020, post-pandemic viewpoint.
So, Alvin, tell us, what do you want kids to learn from this book about money? Not just the, you know, the value of the money, but the beauty of it, the historical beauty of it, how the coins were created, and all that goes behind creating this wonderful, gorgeous money. When I was a kid, a lot of us collected money. I know my father, because he had been in World War II, he had a bunch of old coins, and one of the first things I remember doing as a kid was taking those coins out of his trunk.
Yes. When I travel, I bring back coins for my godchildren and for my friends' children. What I want kids to get out of this is what's appropriate to their time of development. So when you're young and you're like 7 or 8, that's when kids begin to accumulate things like baseball cards or coins or dolls. And that's the time when their curiosity will be most sparked by telling them about the different currencies. What are the characteristics? Because kids are learning to categorize. As they get older and are capable of more abstract thinking, then the book will talk to them about things like interest rates and mortgages and how currency rate changes. All of those things are important. But ultimately, we want kids to walk away with a sense of how money is a useful tool in their lives. It's not the be-all and end-all, but they see every day their parents buying things, their parents paying bills, transactions occurring, things their friends are buying. We want them to understand these things, but also find out how they can use money to bring riches of all kinds, not just financial riches, into their lives.
Well, you're right, because one of the things I really love is the idea that kids learn about money, about things like mortgages, interest rates, exchange rates, because how can they understand how to make a better world if they don't understand their own budget, and let alone the budget of the country?
This is true. And this is an evolving situation where as a child gets older, their knowledge and curiosity deepen, and they're much more open to understanding that material. I think to teach it too early runs a risk that the kid will not fully understand it, but by introducing it in a simple way, the way Sarah has done in this book, it opens the child to understanding, to becoming a lifelong learner about money, which is important because, as you and I know, it does not stay the same, does it?
Oh, no. And Sarah, you mentioned research. What were some of the fun things that you discovered, and did you actually go places to look at money? Did they let you into Fort Knox, by the way?
No, I mean, I had a lot of really fascinating Zoom calls and phone calls with experts, but usually, you know, I am a mom of four. Travel is not always feasible for me, so I wish I went to these far-off places and got to see these amazing mints, and I have been to the Franklin Mint, I have to say. While I was researching this book, my kid actually had a field trip there, so I got to go there and see how money is made in Philadelphia. But as far as, like, surprising facts goes with this book I've really enjoyed writing about big money. I'm a big Guinness Book of World Records fan, so I always like to fascinate about the biggest and the wildest things out there. And so there's a section called Big Money, and I focus on things like the rye stones on the island of Yap in the Pacific Ocean, which was their currency, and you can still go there and see these giant boulders that they used as their coinage, although they didn't exchange it necessarily like we exchange money today. They did take ownership of it, and it was just like a lot of fun stories about how they would go and get the limestone from another island, create these coins, bring them over to their island. One time one fell into the ocean, but the owner of it still claimed ownership to it because they knew where it was, and that was his currency, and his wealth was in on the bottom of the ocean, but it still made sense to them. So it's neat to see like the evolution of how different cultures use money in the past and how it's evolved to today and how it might look like in the future as well.
Well, when you said big money, I immediately thought of a $1,000 bill. Do mm-hmm. either one of you have a $1,000 bill?
No.
They're very rare. No, I've never had even seen one in real life. I've seen it online, but not on real life. Not real life.
I used to carry around three $1,000 bills.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Yes, I did. For many years, I always had three $1,000 bills. That's when I was traveling in the Middle East. So it's very funny. And of course, I wish I had them today. I could buy some eggs. Because, I mean, at the rate eggs are going.
Did you spend the $1,000 bills eventually?
Oh, yes. Eventually, I spent them. But I did have them for many years. And nowadays, I could buy a couple dozen eggs with those.
So actually, that's really funny. Because for years ago, I did an interview with Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple Computer. And he gave me a $2 bill out of the back of his Hummer. And I have carried that $2 bill in my wallet. And often when I'm talking to kids, I'll take this $2 bill out because they've never seen one. And they become completely fascinated by it.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. I love $2 bills, too. The $1,000 was nice, but $2 bills are lovely. And, of course, I love coins because as you did, Alvin, I traveled a lot to all sorts of countries, and I have coins from all these countries. I just love them. Sometimes I will just look at them, and they bring back so many fond memories.
Yes, they do. And I view these coins as inspiration. So when I give them to young people, especially children, often I'll give them a little book about traveling, a Nat Geo book that talks about a country or something like that as a part of the inspiration, because you want to keep that curiosity alive. And they will eventually start to think about, how can I get to that country? How do I travel there? I have to earn money to do this. So it's also inspiring them to think about how they can use finances to expand their worlds, to see more of the outside world and grow that way.
So how did you get involved in money? Did you collect coins when you were a kid?
No, I was raised on a farm and we were very, very poor. We had no money at all. My first really encounter with money started when I went to college up in Maine. And I was on scholarship and had to do work study. And because my parents had no money at all, I had to manage my money carefully. But all of that changed and become a much bigger subject for me when I moved in 1982 to New York City and started working on Wall Street, where people were earning six figures and seven figures. It was unbelievable to me. And I remember coming home from work one day and reading an article about a guy that I went to school with who was suddenly worth $1 billion. And I asked myself the following question: what did that guy know about money or learn about money that I never did? That started my journey. And since then, I've been learning about money, how it works, how investments work. And I share that knowledge.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And as a said, I love this book. And, you know, I grew up on a farm also without any money, and we had no money until we moved to the city. And that's where I first got my first, Well, my first silver dollar, and that was from Jimmy Hoffa.
Jimmy Hoffa? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And that's a story.
I still have it, and he also gave me my name. So if you're wondering why I introduced myself as Patsy with a Z, it's because that's how he used to say my name. He would say Patsy, and he would say 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a great story.
So I learned about what a 2-bit was real fast. And then as as it went on, he used to give me either 50-cent pieces or silver dollars.
What was your money lesson that you learned from that period, Patsy?
Save it. I still have those coins, and also a little bit of. I wanted more. I just wanted. I love it.
That's wonderful. I love it. It's like you're still in touch with that little girl inside you from that period of time. You know, you, when you were getting that, were you about 8 or 9 when that happened?
7.
Seven, that's
six or seven.
Because that's when kids learn of accumulation, numeration, and setting goals for themselves, and they become fascinated by these objects. So that is perfect. You were perfectly developmental for that time.
And, of course, one of the things I love that you mentioned here about the British money, because I lived in England, and I love all that money. I love all that colorful money. I want American money, but boy, I do love to collect all the pretty money from Europe and around the world.
Yes, and you know, it's been National Geographic's mission forever to bring the world to their readers, and so this is just a way that we can introduce kids to geography as well by saying you may never be able to go to South Africa anytime soon, or maybe you will, but here's what the money looks like, and it's really, really cool. There's animals on there. There's rhinos and big cats. And so there's a section that just showcases cool money from around the world, and some of it is so beautiful, like you mentioned, colorful and very different from what we are used to in the United States.
So, Elvin, I do like that part that you were writing about the stock market, and I think that's very important. Breaking down the stock market is great. That's a wonderful section. You must have had fun with that one.
I did, because I love to tie investing to a kid's interest. A kid is interested in a piece of technology or a game or clothing, and I said, oh, you know, this company makes that. Why don't we sit down and follow that company? And first we talk about investing just following the price, and then we talk about what happens to the company. Are your friends buying this? What is the effect that has on the company's income? Are other kids buying this product? So you tie it to their interest, and you gradually bring them in and expand it, and it makes them see the world and finance in a much broader way, and they understand wealth building. And that's a key process to building the financial security that they want for their future.
And, of course, then you have the section on going broke, which I think a lot of kids will find it interesting about Lady Gaga.
I guess, you know, I actually did not know that about Lady Gaga until I researched this section. And so she lost a lot of her money, and it was pretty, really bad time for her. But then look at her now.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a dose of motivation for kids who might not, you know, be from the best financial backgrounds, and maybe their parents are going through a hard time. I kind of thought, well, they can apply this to their own lives and say, okay, there's hope, because we always want to give our readers hope and encourage them to dream big. So it's like Lady Gaga, Walt Disney, even Abraham Lincoln, they all kind of were down on their luck at some point in time, but then were able to rebound.
Oh, you could have put me in there too. Just say 2008 to me. And living in Florida, and you know what happened here in this state.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I could be right in that chapter there. But it is a fun book, as always. One of the wonderful things for me, as living on a farm as I was in northern Michigan, it was Nat Geo magazines that opened the world to me. because we were very poor. We had nothing. And I don't know, there must have been a traveling salesman who talked my mom into getting that subscription to Nat Geo. Mm-hmm. And those magazines would come, and it was like sunshine. It was sunshine to us.
Mm-hmm. And uh-huh. I had the same experience growing up with my grandfather. He's one of those people who would collect them all and put them on a bookshelf, and I would just peel back, try to find the oldest issues and see how they changed over the years, and it actually sparked my interest in magazines, which launched my writing career. So I think everybody has a little bit of that nostalgia with National Geographic.
Absolutely. And Alvin, I think that your work and with children is so wonderful because it is, you know, and I do hope kids will collect coins, because I don't know how much longer we'll have coins at the rate we're going. You know, when an egg starts costing, I was just at the vegetable market, and one egg costs 80 cents.
That's expensive.
That's expensive. So, you know, when they start hitting a dollar an egg, I guess they won't even make coins anymore. But
you know, the wonderful part of that story is about the cost of eggs, is that as the economies change, the kids will have the knowledge to grow with it and make the changes necessary and set the priorities in their lives that will help them to be able to maintain a lifestyle, have some financial security, but also help others who may not be as fortunate as they are. Philanthropy is a very important part of the message of this book.
Absolutely. And both of you have just put together a wonderful book for kids, and one that parents and grandparents will read too, because you just can't put it down when you get it. You thumb through it and you find something and then you go back. You've done a wonderful job. I know that, of course, everybody should go to the Nat Geo Kids website. It's fantastic. It has so much videos and games and everything that a kid could, you know, just keep a kid occupied. And this book, of course, is so, as always, Nat Geo books are of such a value, you know, priced so perfectly. It's available online at Nat Geo Kids. And both of you, I know, Alvin, do you also have a website, or do you have something where you want to share with
us? Yes. My website is alvinhall.com. And I think one of the most interesting things people will find on that website is a story, a memory of my childhood that I recorded on NPR, The Moth. It's called Beyond My Viewmaster Dreams.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. That's a great thing for people to do. Go there. Discover more about Alvin, because Alvin, obviously, he came from a farm, and so many of us farm kids, you know, we were motivated, right?
Yes, we were, because we wanted to see the world. We wanted to get away from the farm, and I did.
But it's funny. My brother was the same way, motivated, you know, made it in the big corporate world. And then one day, he met my sister-in-law at an airport, and they said, "Why are we doing this?" And he said, "Let's go to the farm." And she didn't even know there was a farm. But it's still there, 80 acres, and he did move back to the farm, had no idea what he was doing, but became an organic farmer. So, when you have enough, you know, understand money enough, and you can do that, it's pretty
good. Exactly.
Great. Alvin, mm-hmm. I think you're delightful. And Sarah,
thank you.
I think it's so wonderful that you've worked on this book and did so much work and
thank
research,
you.
And it's all so beautiful. And thank everybody at Nat Geo. This is a wonderful Valentine's Day gift, people. Really, mm-hmm. If you have a kid in your life, get this book, give it to the kid for Valentine's Day, because they will love it. And also, if you have, you know, if you have some extra money, get one and send it to a children's hospital, perhaps one near you, or to St. Jude's, or Shriners. Because the kids in the hospital, can you imagine how happy a kid in a hospital would be to get this book?
Oh, yes, that's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I always encourage all of my listeners, send a book to a kid in a hospital, because they need books. And even now, during the pandemic, they didn't share books at all. So it was really, really difficult. And I'm not sure if they're still started sharing, but they always appreciate a book. And you can go right to the Nat Geo Kids website, order it, and have it sent directly to a hospital. Both of you, I want to thank you so much. I think the work on this book was fun, and it's now fun for all of the people who are going to read it, and especially for kids learning about the value of money. So Sarah Wassner-Flynn and Elvin Hall, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You guys are a joy.
You
thank
are
you so
a joy,
much
Patsy.
For having us.
Okay, bye-bye. And
thank you.
You guys make a lot of sense.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Elvin. Bye. Okay, is that nice? Oh, they're so sweet. Oh, how much fun they had with this book, I cannot tell you. It was just everything. One picture after another, one page after another, one coin after another. They have some beautiful, beautiful coins in here. Some of the money I had not seen. And there's all the information on how money is made, where it's made, and which countries are richest. And let me see, which country do they say is richest? I just want to tell everybody. Norway. Did you know that? Did you know that Norway? Oh, whoa. I didn't realize they were the richest. Ah, it's because of petroleum. My goodness, that's why. They've got all that petroleum. They're richer than everybody. My goodness. I didn't know that. Anyway, so see, there's lots of things to learn in this book. And mostly, I think you should learn about, my goodness, what to do about inflation. An egg is 80 cents, and I can't believe it. That's a nice fresh egg from a fresh farm down the road. But still, that's a lot of money for an egg. So, people, I, again, want to thank Bria Burton for being on today. Just to remind you that next Thursday she will be sitting here in this chair, and if by any reason I should accidentally walk in the door, she'll knock me down because she wants to sit here because she had so much fun the last time she did it. So mark your calendar and make sure you join her. But I will be here Tuesday. And I have some interesting guests coming up this month. So make sure you have a wonderful weekend. Read a book, people. And for those of you who made the resolution, are you writing? It's January. It's February. What am I talking about? And you have to be writing. Okay, everybody. Remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very, very lucky, hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the All Hallmark Channel. You never know. And I am hoping for Carol J. Perry for that to happen to her. Meanwhile, everybody say something nice to somebody and have an attitude of gratitude. And I want to, again, thank Christine Newell for being on the program to talk about her book, The Habit of Grateful. A very fine book. Everybody have a wonderful day. And I said something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And he saluted me. I saluted him. And I'm out of here. And I'm going to have a great day. Bye-bye, everybody.